From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Georgia's foster system is in crisis. The number of kids in care rose almost 60% between 2010 and 2017. More than 20,000 children have been in state custody so far this year. Samantha Max has been covering foster care in Middle Georgia as health reporter for The Telegraph in Macon and joins us from our bureau there now. Samantha, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And John DeGarmo, he is director of the Foster Care Institute. He and his wife have also been foster parents to dozens of children, and that's for more than a decade. He's joining us on the line from Monticello. John, hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me on the program.
Well, thank you both. Samantha, you report that Georgia has a foster care problem, which is two-pronged. What do you mean by that?
There are more kids in foster custody than ever before, but there aren't enough houses to keep up with them. So you see this demand rising, but the supply is just not keeping up. So you have to think about where do those kids go when there aren't enough foster homes for them.
So why is there this recent jump in children in the system?
It's actually been a pretty steady increase over the years, for many years now, but especially really since 2012 is when, or 2010 is when the uptick began again. And there slew of different, you know, factors that can be at play there, whether it's poverty, whether it's instability, but also things like the opioid crisis or a new hotline was put in place recently to report different situations where kids maybe should be put in the foster system. So it's kind of this perfect storm of all of these different things coming together.
We're going to look at some of those reasons in more detail. But John, first, is Georgia worse off than other states? Is this really a crisis?
Oh, absolutely it's a crisis. Yes, I've had the privilege of traveling across the country, working with foster care agencies, and Georgia's got a particular problem that is just not going away.
Yeah, well, this is something that Samantha has looked into down to the county level in Middle Georgia. Samantha, does Division of Family and Child Services in Bibb County, where you are, have the budget for this increased number of kids in care?
Bibb County's DFACS office gets funding from a collection of both county, state, and federal funds, and most of it is coming from the state and federal level. But for years now, the county has also pitched in, and a lot of times that funding might actually be used for matching for the state and federal funds. But this year, our local budget faced a bit of a crisis. Over the summer, we missed our deadline to pass a new budget, and there was an argument over raising property rates. Essentially, what happened was that a lot of agencies saw cuts to their budgets, and the Division of Family and Children's Services actually faced the greatest cut of 25%. All of a sudden, they had about $200,000 less to work with.
That's significant. How many children in Bibb County are in state custody? And how many foster homes are there under DFACS?
As of mid-October, when I was reporting this story, there were 265 children in state custody, but only 60 DFACS foster homes.
John, Samantha mentioned that one obstacle is not just about funding, but the insufficient number of foster parents out there who can take kids in. Why don't more people want to foster children?
That's a great question. So many people have misconceptions, and I had those misconceptions myself before I was a foster parent. Misconceptions that people have to have a big house or a large income, or the children are bad, and all those are false. You don't have to have a big house. You don't have to be married. You don't have to have a large income. And the children are simply victims of abuse or neglect or abandonment. These children are victims, and they're just looking for somebody to give them a chance and help them. But the other factor is this. Foster parents feel that they do not get the support they need during times of grief and loss or burnout and stress. And what I mean by grief and loss is this. When a child comes into my home as a foster parent, there's not a label. There's no label of biological or adoptive or foster. They're all my children, and I love them with all my heart unconditionally, so that when they leave the home, for whatever reason it may be, when they return back to their biological parents or they age out or whatever it may be, it's like losing my own child. And so many foster parents suffer from what is known as compassion fatigue or secondary traumatic stress, and they have those feelings of grief and loss. And that's very hard for a foster parent recover from if they're not getting the support that they need.
Let's talk about that. In May, my GPB colleague Leah Fleming interviewed Virginia Pryor. She was then director of the Georgia of DFACS, the Georgia Division of Family and Child Services. Here she is explaining the nuances of serving families and children in Georgia.
every family's different, every family's need is different, and every child's need is different. So, you know, at the highest level, we have to make sure that children are safe and that families have the supports that they need to be able to appropriately care for their child.
What I heard from you, John, is that on the ground, the system doesn't really have the capacity to address those different needs
of
different
families. The larger number of children coming in to the foster care system, mainly due to the opioid crisis, today's caseworkers are simply overworked, overwhelmed, and under-resourced. They don't have the resources themselves, the caseworkers, and as a result, they can't give the foster parents the need that they need. And also, foster parenting, it's a challenging job. You know, for me, it's the most rewarding thing I've done, but at the same time, it's the most challenging thing I've done. When children come into a home who are suffering from anxieties and suffering from traumas and abuse and suffering from attachment issues or issues of trust, you know, that's a challenge on a family. So it's a very stressful job.
Well, I want to ask you about how you and your wife made the decision to take the plunge, 10 years ago, to take kids in?
Oh, well, actually, we've been doing it for 16 years now, and we did it because, our first child died of a condition called anencephaly, or some pronounce it anencephaly. It's a condition where the brain or skull never truly forms. And afterwards, after we had three children after that, I recognized when I moved to Georgia and teaching in a rural high school setting that there were so many children in this rural setting who were having issues of behavior or academics or attendance in schools. And I kept wondering, what is this? What is the correlation? And then I met some of their birth parents. And then I truly realized, yes, it starts in the home. I had lost my first child. How can I help these other children who are suffering in some way? And that led the decision of foster parenting.
Well, I'm so sorry about your loss, but also really heartened by what you've taken on. In fact, you and your wife recently founded Never Too Late. This is a group home for adolescent boys in Monticello. You opened it in part because of the foster care shortage or the shortage of homes in Middle Georgia.
Right? Yeah, that's correct. My wife and I have had as many as 11 children placed in our house at the same time. And the state number is 6, but there's such a need in our area that we've signed waiver after waiver, if you will. And we recognize that, you know what, we cannot continue taking 9, 10, 11 kids in our own home, but how can we help more children? How can we take it up to another level? You know, the statistics are very grim for children when they age out of foster care. 55% of these children will drop out of school. 65% will end up homeless. 75% will spend time incarcerated. And like so many others, the cycle will repeat itself for the next generation. So we thought, how can we help more? How can we stop this vicious cycle? So we have opened up a residential home for boys in our area.
That's John DeGarmo. He and his wife founded Never Too Late, a group home for adolescent boys in Monticello, Georgia. Also with us, Samantha Max, who reports for the Telegraph of Macon, has been following the story about the strains on the foster care system. Much of it's having to do with the cascading effects of the opioid crisis. Samantha, what kind of stories or kids did you meet that were caught up in that addictive cycle?
I did not come across specifically any kids who had made it into the foster system because of the opioid crisis, mostly because of privacy issues. But if you look at the reports and all of the national data, you can see that obviously the opioid epidemic has reached every corner of this country. And, you know, you think about people who are using opioids, it really spans the gamut of every age group, every population, and a lot of times they have kids. So you think about if someone is addicted to drugs, how can they really care for a child? And a lot of times they do need that support from the state.
John, as a foster parent, have you taken in any kids who were caught up in this swirl of addiction?
Absolutely, almost every day. To be sure, when we're seeing more parents addicted to drugs and we're seeing more parents incarcerated because of opiates or hospitalized or even dying because of the opioid crisis, where are these children going? They're flooding into a foster care system in our state that cannot handle it. And I've had child time after time after time placed in my home whose parents have been addicted to opiates in some way. Oh, my goodness. In fact, I've adopted 3 children from the foster care system. 2 of them are third-generation foster care, which means their parents and their grandparents were also in foster care and due mainly to the opioid crisis.
And does that happen frequently, multi-generational foster care?
Yes. sadly, it does. Sadly, it is something. When these children do age out and they don't get the support they need, they don't have the stability, they don't have those living skills or social skills or even high school diploma to fall back upon, yes, for so many of these children, it starts again for their next generation.
And aging out is what, 18? What is the age here in Georgia?
That is correct. Now, 18. Now, there is a program where the children can sign themselves back in, if you will, if they go to college or they have some type of independent living program. But sadly, so many of these youth do not take that program. And they do it simply because, in their mind, in their eyes, they don't want to be labeled a foster child. No one wants that label. And in their mind, the foster care system has failed them in some way.
So there is a stigma not only from outside of the system, you talked about some of the misconceptions, but even within it that people don't want to be identified as a foster kid.
Oh, absolutely. Who wants that label? When a child is placed into my home as a foster parent, you know, I used to think they wanted to be in my home, that I was helping them, but that's the opposite effect. You know, I can give them all that stability and that security and that unconditional love, if you will, but at the end of the day, they want to go back to their norm, even if their norm was an abusive environment. And they want to go back to their mommy and their daddy, even if it was a horrific situation, because that's their norm, that's their family in their sense, and society has placed a negative stereotype on foster children, if you will, that label. And again, no child wants that label placed upon them.
Well, Samantha, you report that the Division of Family and Child Services, again, DFACS, their primary goal is to keep families together. Now, officials have told you that they are ramping up on those efforts because of the influx of kids into the system. So what is DFACS now doing in terms of early intervention?
I think the goal is always family reunification. You know, when you're a kid, you want to stay with your biological parents. And when you're a parent, you don't want to be separated from your child, even if circumstances sometimes get in the way. So I think what DFACS has really chosen to do, and this is not new, but really just ramping up the efforts, is putting in the support before a child needs to be removed. They can connect them with therapeutic counseling, whether that be in their home or taking them to outpatient counseling, and really just having caseworkers work with them to see what are the patterns, what are the issues, how can all members of the family work together to make it a more stable environment for the children or the child. And another thing is sometimes people just need to be connected to resources that either they didn't know were available or didn't know how to find, whether that's SNAP benefits or the Women and Infant and Children Program. There are so many resources that perhaps people aren't aware of, and it's really just a matter of having that guiding hand help them find the support they need.
Well, you are describing what sounds like very active, directed, and focused interface with people who are in the foster system and the state. Is it really out there?
You would hope that it would be. And I think that every person who works every day for the Division of Family and Children Services is going above and beyond to provide those services. However, there just is a shortage of caseworkers. When I spoke with Ms. Shannon Fields, who's the director of our field office here in Bibb County, she said that she was hoping to take on more caseworkers in the coming year. However, because of the county budget cuts, that's a project they're going to have to put on hold. And I'm sure that that's the case at different offices across the state, probably even across the country.
So, Samantha, you do report that children who spend time in foster care suffer mental health issues at higher rates, something that John echoed earlier. So what are some of the consequences and ways of building trust with kids who have that kind of emotional baggage that they're carrying?
That's a really good question. And I've spoken with multiple therapists who specialize in this. What they see often is that just so many children who have spent time in foster custody are suffering from trauma. I mean, if you think about it, whether it's the experience that they're coming from in their biological home, the actual act of being separated from their biological family, and then, you know, what happens next if they go to one home, multiple homes after that, it's really just a very tumultuous situation to find yourself in, especially as a child. So those effects will linger with them if they don't get the support that they need. And even if they do get the support that they need, you know, that's never something that you can erase. One therapist who I spoke with who specializes in children who have spent time in foster custody and who actually has adopted four of her own foster children, she basically told me that as a counselor, what she really has to do is help children take back control of their story. You know, so many things have been outside of their control in the past, and they pick up these behaviors, whether it's maybe hoarding food, being aggressive, things that oftentimes adults or bystanders may not understand what the roots of those behaviors are. But if you look at the trauma that they've experienced, you can kind of break it down with them and help them understand, you know, this is a chapter of your story, but you can write the next chapter and you can take control with your own voice.
John, this is something that you've seen, I'm sure, over and over again, this trope about children in foster care badly behaved. Is it the trauma that we've been discussing, and how do you as parents cope with that?
Well, you know, you hit something that's very important there, and Samantha did as well. When a child goes from one home to the next home, which is known as multiple displacement, and sadly happens to so many children in foster care. In fact, I've worked with some children across the country who have been in 30, 40, 50 different homes. You can imagine what that does to an attachment, issues with the child, or issues of trust. And then when they go from one home to the next, many doctors will prescribe them more and more medication. So it's often the case where children in foster care are over-medicated with psychotropic drugs. All of this plays a part of the issues of anxiety that these children face. It is challenging. On top of that, no child wants to be placed in my home as a foster child, so it takes time. Foster parents must be very understanding, very committed, very patient, compassionate, and to provide what the child needs more than anything else, and that is to love that child despite all of these challenges they bring in the home. But yes, it is challenging for a foster parent, and that's one of the reasons why foster parents burn out when they don't get a break that they need.
So what then is your message, John, to other people who are considering becoming foster parents?
Well, my message is this. To begin with, if you are considering becoming a foster parent, the first thing you need to do is talk to your partner or your spouse to make sure that both of you are on board, both of you are committed, because it will take both of you to do so. To me, it's been the most rewarding thing I've ever done. Every child that's come in my home has changed me, has made me a better person in some way. And I want to let people know this. As a foster parent, you might not change the world, but for these children, their world will be changed because of what you do.
John, how about your message to kids who are hoping to or waiting to be adopted?
I would tell those children who are out there, who are in the foster care system, I would tell them this, that there is somebody out there right now who is praying for them, who is wanting to help them. Not everybody can be a foster parent, but everybody can help in some way. And there are those people out there right now who are wanting to help a child in foster care, a youth in foster care, to provide them with support, provide them with school supplies, and provide them with mentoring and tutoring, to provide them with so much. And I would tell that child right now who is waiting for someone to adopt them, there's a family right now who is ready for you.
John DeGarmo, thank you so much.
Thank you.
John and his wife are longtime foster care parents. He's director of the Foster Care Institute, and they recently opened a group home for boys in Monticello, Georgia. Samantha Max, health reporter for The Telegraph, thanks so much for your reporting on this.
Thanks so much for having me.